Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Extra Time for the first of our J2 2023 season preview pods. I'm John Steele, and joining me to look through eight of this season's runners and riders in the Japanese second tier, it's James Taylor. James, how are you doing?
Hi John, happy new year. I'm all right, thank you. Just surviving through quite awful snow up here in the mountains, but generally pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, all good, thanks, James. Yeah, I was going to complain about the fact that it's -2 degrees this morning in Yokohama, in my part of the world. But I think you've definitely trumped that. I think you're at -7, so you've won the battle of the colder podcasters this morning, certainly.
Yes.
Yeah, but, well done.
Not much of a victory.
To warm us up, let's start. Oh, happy New Year to you too, by the way. But to warm us up, maybe we can start talking about some J2 teams and their pre-season preparations. For anyone who's listening for the first time, this podcast, J-Talk Extra Time, focuses on J2, and also with the help of Magic Mike Innes in the J-Talk Short Corner segment, we cover J3, Japan's third tier as well. So I like to think of us as a kind of little brother or sister to the big J-Talk pod that covers J1, run by Ben and Sam. But if you're interested in J2 and J3, please give us a listen this season. I hope you'll stay longer for the ride. James, in this first episode of our season previews, I took the liberty of grouping the teams together more or less geographically, so we can argue about how, you know, my grasp of geography later, which is a bit loose. But the general theme for part one is at Greater Kanto, right? So central part of Honshu, you know, Tokyo and the surrounding areas, and that means we're going to kick things off by talking about Machida Zelvia. Obviously, last season for them, 2022, was pretty disappointing. I think after kind of being tipped to do well, they ended up finishing 15th with just 51 points, 14 wins, 9 draws and 19 losses. Only 51 goals scored against 50 conceded. So they never really got going in any kind of sort of promotion chasing sense. And there's loads of changes, you know, in the backroom staff and on the pitch for this season. James, Machida Zelvia, what are we thinking?
Yeah, well, the end of last season was a disappointing time to be a Machida supporter. And I think now is a very exciting time to be a Machida supporter. I'm not a Machida supporter, and I'm quite excited about what they have been doing in the off-season with the new manager, Go Kuroda, from Aomori Yamada High School.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He's got a very good track record of success at that level. And I think this is his first professional managerial post. So I'm very intrigued to see how he does. And also, they've done a lot of business. And I think they've lost a lot of attackers. So Aria Jasuru Hasegawa was released. Chong Tese's retired. Dudu's gone to FC Imabari, thankfully, because he annoys me. They've also lost their captain, Taiki Hirato, and impressive forward Shusuke Ota, gone to Kyoto and Niigata, which they both deserved those moves to J1 teams. They were very, very good players, even through Machida's disappointing time last year. But to replace those, they've signed a lot of very interesting players. Now, Sean covered this in your chat with him the other week, so I won't go into too much detail on it, but the likes in defence, they've got Carlos Gutierrez from Tochigi, Jurato Ikeda from Akita, Jang Mingyu from Jeff, are all pretty good signings defensively. And then further forward, Shuto Inaba from Akita, Atsushi Kurokawa, who was pretty good at Omiya a couple of years ago, Hokuto Shimoda from Oita, Daigo Takahashi. They've extended Kazuma Yamaguchi's loan because he was injured for quite a lot of last year. They've got Mitchell Duke up front from Okayama. And perhaps the most exciting one, I think, is they've got Takaya Numata from Yamaguchi, who I think we both voted as our Rookie of the Year last year.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is that most of the signings they've made are from other J-League clubs. They haven't made many university or high school signings. And they've signed a lot of what I think are good players. The challenge will be for Kuroda to get them working as a team, but that's the challenge for every manager, isn't it? Because every team has a lot of changes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I've got. We should say at this point a big shout out to Michael_Master on Twitter, who without his spreadsheets of ins and outs. I'm not sure these pods would function in any meaningful way. So thanks for those, Michael. And I've got the Matcha Deselvia section in front of me now. I believe they have at this point in time 21 new players have come in. So you've got a whole new squad basically to work with. And as you've mentioned, plenty of experienced and good J League names in there. Hokuto Shimoda from Oita is a good one, I think. Daigo Takahashi from Shimizu. You mentioned Mitch Duke up front, and Eric, you know, who was impressive at Yokohama Marinos a couple of seasons ago. He's coming from a Chinese team. So, yeah, and a player whose name I can never quite get, Stojicic, the goalkeeper from Sendai, is coming as well. So that team looks oven ready for a promotion challenge, doesn't it, on paper. And like you said, the challenge for Gokuroda is going to be to integrate himself, first of all, and then to integrate this kind of, you know, a huge amount of new players. I don't really have any stats in front of me. I probably should have checked, but integrating that many new players probably won't mean an instant success, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It might take them a while to get going. But I feel, my gut feeling is, James, based on the transfer business that they've done and the money that's clearly available, we have to treat Machida as a serious sort of top six contender, don't we? Added to that, I would say, I think if Gokuroda, he has this impressive record at the high school level, which is a big deal in Japan, football-wise. I feel that so much money has been spent on the squad that if it gets to the midway point of the season and they're not doing well, I don't think the front office or the board will hesitate to make a change of manager. So my point is, even if they're doing badly midway through the season, I think they'll change manager in it and try and rise up the table. So I feel like at this point in time, they're a real top six or even top two contender. Would you go along with that, or am I crazy?
Well, it's very early. The first team we talked about, and you're going for it already. I just looking at the list of names that have come in, I'd say, yeah, it looks like this is a team that should be challenging for the top six. But there's, you know, a lot of things can happen. I don't know. I think that if I were a Machida supporter, I'd be really excited about this season.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And like you mentioned, losing Taiki Hirato is a big one. And I'm a big fan of Kaishu Sano as well, who's gone to Kashima Antlers. But and obviously Chong Teze going out, Dudu going out. But I think, and Shusuke Ota you mentioned, but that's mitigated by having so many exciting signings coming into the building, isn't it? And we have to say, as well, it's probably worth mentioning, last season with these players that have been, you know, that have moved on, they did only finish 15th. So this is kind of, this will come up again, I think, later in my conversation with Steve Fryer about Omiya. But when you've had an underwhelming season, it's hard to be too upset, or, you know, when players leave at the end of a disappointing season, you greet that with a lot more of a kind of shrug of the shoulders, don't you, than if they leave after a successful year. So yeah, everything seems to be heading in the right direction for Machida. They've got their fancy new Adidas sponsored or Adidas produced kit as well, so they're starting to look the part. You know, in terms of a supplier, I suppose, as well as a signing. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how they do. But I have a feeling, yes, with so many new players, we are perhaps looking at there might be a bedding in period for Gokuroda, and we perhaps won't see the sort of the true extent of what he's able to do with him until sort of 10, 12, 15 games in, maybe, I don't know. But yeah, okay. All right, James, that's sounding pretty good as a kind of a warm-up on Machida. We've already promoted one team, I think, in the very first 10 minutes of our preview, so that's a good start. But yeah, let's take a quick break here, because the next team we're going to talk about is Tokyo Verdy, and we have Lewis at Illusion of Ease on Twitter to cover them for us again this year. So yeah, please stay tuned, and here is Lewis on Tokyo Verdy.
Hello, my name's Lewis. I'm originally from Kilmarnock in Scotland, but I've been in Tokyo for 4.5 years, and I'm a Tokyo Verdy fan. Thanks to John for giving me the opportunity to ramble a wee bit about their chances for 2023. Signings for 2023, definitely needed them because we lost half the first team at the end of the year. The club have decided to go for a blend of youth and experience, which is all well and good, provided neither the youth nor the experience is too crap. So 11 players, 11 new guys in. Five from universities, which is not necessarily a bad thing, given that one of our best players in recent years, Sato Ryoga, also came from uni. Hopefully, there'll be a gem or two amongst those five. Outside of that, six new guys, three defenders, one on loan from Kashima Antlers, and then Miyahara Kazuya and Chida Kaito from Grampus and Blaubitz Akita, respectively. Hopefully, they'll be solid replacements from what we've lost. Docker Boniface to Yokohama, I think. Don't know a great deal about them at the moment. I think there was a bit of surprise that Miyahara dropped a division. Chida Kaito may or may not be used as a backup. I think Taniguchi will be the main centre half for this season, coupled with either Taira or one of the new guys, Hayashi or Chida, I guess. Going forward, I think I'm probably most excited about Mario Engels coming from Sparta Rotterdam. My feeling is that he was used more as a winger in Europe, but I think we're going to really struggle for goals this season unless he turns out to be a bit of a goal scorer as well. So I wonder whether there's a possibility that we switch away from a 4-3-3 to 4-4-2 for this season with Engels and Kawamura up front together. Kitajima Yuji coming from Fukuoka. Maybe part of the Sato Ryoga deal, possibly. He's on loan for a season. He looks half decent, kind of left winger, quite exciting left winger. And Saito Kosuke coming from Yokohama, who's relatively well regarded, I think, by their fans. And I think some of them were a wee bit disappointed to see him go. So hopefully he turns out, provided he can avoid injury, turns out to be the who we need in the middle to be able have a little bit more creativity. I don't know. Like overall, I think we'll see what happens. I think they're in good hands in terms of the manager. He's much more able to adapt to different formations, different systems if required, and hopefully he'll be able to bring the best out of them over the season. So yeah, we'll see. Among the players that left at the end of last season, I would say that the big three would be Sato Ryoga and Docker Boniface and Baba Seya, ones that'll be missed the most. Arai Mizuki. He had already left midway through the season to go on loan to Portugal, so we'd basically resigned to losing him anyway. I think the big frustration was that he then came back and then buggered off immediately to a J1 team, leaving everybody wondering why they'd let him go in the first place halfway through the season. So yeah, I think Sato Ryoga amongst those would be the biggest loss. I think he was a cut above in terms of his ability to like link midfield and attack. His finishing was comfortably the best in the side, so he'll be the most difficult to replace. But I'm hopeful that we will be able to at least, if not replace the man, make up for his loss with a slightly different approach or different system for next season. In terms of the manager, I think it speaks volumes that one of the best pieces of news of the last couple of weeks was Joe Fuku re-signing a new contract. Everybody's pretty much over the moon with that. I think last season he showed that he's able to get quite a lot out of even more limited players, and even with a less expansive squad, and I think the results against Frontale and some of the other results in the Tenno High last season speak to that. So for this season, given that it looks like we are working on a slightly more restricted budget, possibly, at least certainly not a much more expanded one. I think he's probably our best bet for an outside playoff spot with that squad. So I don't think we can expect anything better than Joe Hook at the moment. I'm more than happy that he's sticking around for another season. Overall chances for 2023. If we'd kept some of those key players and we'd strengthened in the right places, I would say that Verdy have a very solid chance of promotion this season, one of the favourites maybe even. But given that we've lost so many of them and replaced them with still a little bit of unknown quantities at the moment, it's difficult to say in all seriousness that we're going to really, really push for it this season. Head, I would say maybe the same again, roughly mid-table. Heart, stranger things have happened. We've seen teams that we didn't really expect to do so well go quite far in the playoffs. This season as well is, there's no, because there's no promotion relegation playoff with J1 this season, it's an even more kind of tantalizing prospect, if you will. So I will hope, yeah, I mean, Heart, if you're a Verdy fan, your heart always says promotion. Head, I still think it's a little bit of an outside chance at the moment. What I'm looking forward to most for this season is, I don't know, the drunken title party at Shibuya Crossing, Hachiko decked in green. Personally, it would probably be a few more away trips. Every season, a mate of mine and I, we look at the fixture list, pick a few games that we want to go and see, book some hotels, treat it as like a long weekend and get to travel about Japan. It's a great way to see the country. I've been to, you know, Kumamoto, Oita, Morioka, Sendai, Kanazawa, various places. Great away trips, and that would probably be my approach this season as well. Sit down, take a look at some of the places I've never been, maybe, you know, Yamaguchi, somewhere like that, and look forward to those trips. And yeah, hopefully Verdi do well. Hopefully we keep the hope alive for as long as possible. But overall, yeah, J2 is a great division. It's probably better than J1 in terms of away trips. So that'll be my approach this season.
Extra time. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks, Lewis, for your thoughts on Tokyo Verdy. And yes, I hope it's a good season for the boys in green from the capital. James is back with me, and we are going to talk about another side from the kind of I don't know, greater Tokyo area. James, sharp intake of breath all round. It's Jeff United, Chiba, and yeah, last year they did all right. They finished 10th. 17 wins, 10 draws, 15 losses, just 44 goals scored, which is not that impressive, but they only conceded 42, so they did end up with a positive goal difference, and they picked up 61 points across their 42 matches. Now, transfer business has not been as, I don't know, frenetic as at Machida, I don't think, James, but they have a new manager in charge in the form of Yoshiyuki Kobayashi, who's been promoted from being the assistant, in the kind of club kind of coaching staff last year. What do you make of what Jeff have been doing in the transfer window?
Yes, those. I think for Jeff, the most interesting thing is the players that they've kept. So they kept Keita Buanika, and they've kept Daisuke Suzuki and Tomoya Miki, who I think for maybe the second year in a row were pretty surprised that he's stayed and not earned a move to a J1 team, because he had another pretty impressive year last year. And they've signed Deku Matsuda from Kanazawa, which is interesting. I think I remember a while back Johnny Nichols saying that when he was at Gamba on the under-23 team in J3, Matsuda was used and was quite comfortable playing in a back three. And I think Jeff usually play in a back three, so it will be interesting to see how he readjusts from being used as a right back in a back four at Kanazawa like he was in the last couple of years. I think having signed Naoki Tsubaki from Yokohama F Marinos, who was on loan at Mito, and Hiroto Goya from Oita, getting Saldanha back from Chengdu in China, should cover the loss of Thiago de Leonso, who had scored a few but was not particularly impressive, and the winner of the most baffling transfer of the off-season, which is Solomon Sakuragawa to Okayama on loan. So I think, which you and Johnny covered in your what Sam termed the Two Johnnies pod back at the end of last year, which was excellent. But Jeff, I think the fact also that they've promoted the assistant means I would expect more of the same from them. They've been pretty steady for the last few years, finishing sort of what, 8th, 9th, 10th-ish. So I think, again, they might sort of flirt with top 6, but I would expect them to finish around the same kind of position in the table. But what do you think?
I think we've probably had the same discussion in the past about other teams, but when you promote your assistant coach to the managerial hot seats, there's kind of two ways it can go, and usually I don't, this might just be my kind of selective memory or recency bias, usually it doesn't go that well. I know Niigata were an exception last season, for example, in terms of doing this. So like you said, I think it's difficult to expect too much from Yoshiyuki Kobayashi in the hot seat, because, mm-hmm. yeah, like you said, he's very much the continuity candidate. And if we're being realistic, probably the cheap option to come in as coach. I think the transfer business is interesting without sort of blowing anybody's socks off. I think a lot of the kind of disappointing and underwhelming foreign players are moving on. The Daniel Alves, not that one, Ricardo Lopez, and yeah, you mentioned Thiago de Lancio, who are sort of well-meaning and well-liked, but ultimately, you know, very limited in terms of their impact on the team. You've mentioned the important players coming in, like Naoki Tsubaki, Hiroto Goya up front, which I think is a good one. I also think if any J3 listeners, when Masaru Hidaka coming in from Iwaki, who I'm not sure he's J2 ready or ready for prime time necessarily, but obviously Iwaki romped to the J3 title last year, so maybe I'm wrong on that. He has a wicked left foot and is capable of sort of shooting quite accurately from outside the penalty area. So I'm looking forward to seeing how much game time he actually gets. Because I think there's only a couple of midfielders that have joined, right? I think it's him and Tsubeki are the only kind of two designated like midfielders that have come in during the window. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I think keeping Tomoyamiki is a big win, although he wasn't as important or as effective last year, which I think is probably what has helped Jeff to hold on to him. I think your analysis is probably correct, and I think we can expect more or possibly slightly less of the same. So I think there's a squad there which, if everything clicks and everything goes well, there's the possibility that they will, you know, rise into a kind of top six challenging area. But I think more likely it's going to be another season of sort of building or consolidation, and perhaps upper mid table is where they'll end up, possibly even 10th like they did last year. And what I'm kind of curious about, and I don't wish Jeff any ill will, but I wonder if things are going badly, whether they will stick with Yoshiki Kobayashi, you know, and for how long. I mean, I'm fairly confident that Machida won't be tolerating too many bad runs of form under Gokuroda, for example. Their target's obviously promotion this year. Whereas with Jeff, I'm not really clear on what the board, the front office's kind of expectations or goals are for this year. I think with the squad that they have, another kind of upwardly mobile mid-table finish seems possibly the most likely target, doesn't it? So, yeah, we'll wait and see. There's quite a lot of pressure on Hiroto Goya to score the goals, I think, along with Keita Buenica, now that they've lost Solomon Sakuragawa. Yeah, it's never dull with Jeff, is it, James? So we'll wait to see. But yes, I don't think... I would put them down as an outside playoff, you know, contender. But I think top half finish seems most most realistic to me. Okay, on the subject of top half finishes and, you know, never a dull moment, James, we'll take another pause here because I got the chance to chat to a long-suffering Omia Ardija supporter, Steve Fryer, a couple of days ago at RDJ01 Talk on Twitter. We talked about what we can expect from the Squirrels of Saitama in 2023. So, yeah, here comes my chat with Steve Fryer. Hello, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm with Steve Fryer to talk about Omia Ardija's chances in 2023. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks. It's good to have our kind of sort of regular, you know, check-in on Omia, Steve, and yourself. I know that you enjoyed a big win in Premier League fantasy football at the weekend. Yeah, we perhaps don't need to spend too much time on that, but yeah, I think I'll be cursing Eddie and Ketia for months to come, I think. So well done.
You've got to know.
No, that's it. Well, I'm sure I'll get my revenge, or I'm hopeful I'll get my revenge at some point here. Possibly in the next 5 minutes by asking you some tough questions, Steve. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for coming back on. It's always good to talk. That's your Twitter handle, is it? At RDJ01 Talk. So we're covering all the bases early on. Steve, without further ado, Omia in 2023, just as a, and I apologise in advance, quick review for the listeners. Last season in 2022, it was a bit of a disappointing campaign, to say the least. The team finished 19th with a record of 10 wins, 13 draws, 19 defeats, scoring 48 times, but conceding 64 across the 42-game season. So, yep, Steve, without further ado, how about the new signings that are coming in, Omia, for this season? What do you think of them? And is there anyone in particular that you think might be more important than the others?
Thanks, John. Well, yeah, I mean, about our transfer activity, generally I'm underwhelmed. It's got to be the honest opinion. But mostly it's been loans and some contracted players returning from their loans and a few university players or and some junior players who are becoming professionals for the first time. There's not a lot to get excited about, I think. And I believe that, you know, it's my opinion, there will be pressure on the manager to get the most out of the players. But I think the two key transfers are the defender Urakami from Corfu and the loan player, the Brazilian loan player from Kashua Reysol, Angelotti. You know, Urakami is experienced. I mean, he's still not, you know, he's still, I think, 26 years old, a good age. He spent the last two seasons at Corfu and, you know, he's played fairly regularly over those two seasons. I mean, in 2021, they finished third. So he was part of a good defence. And last season, as you've just pointed out for the listeners, we were not a good defence. But of course, he joins us from Corfu. And last season, Corfu finished just one place higher than Almere. And, you know, they finished 18th and they let in 54 goals to our 64. So they did, as I'm sure your listeners know, they did go to the Emperor's Cup and, you know, which was a great achievement. And, you know, Urakami played in the final. I'm sure he played in some of the games on the way. And I mean, that would have been a great experience for him. He was only substituted in the extra time, which is fair enough. They probably needed fresh legs at the time. So, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I'm in two minds, but I think Naoki Selma, you know, let's face it, he's a good defensive manager. I think he will have spotted, you know, he knows Urakami, I'm sure, and would have researched it. And, you know, let's hope that, you know, he knows what he's doing here, despite my reservations given Kofu's season last year, because I wonder if he was that good, why would they want to let him go to Almere? But and the other player that interests me is Angelotti, the Brazilian. I was a bit confused if he was something to do with Ancelotti in Italy, but it's a different name actually. But you know, he's joined us on loan from Kashua Reysol. You know, he's again a young player. You know, he's 24 years old. You know, he can play, I think he can play on the left up front or out wide. Out wide on the left or up front in the centre. He spent two seasons at Reysol, but only made 23 league appearances and in the league got no goals. I don't know too much. I don't know if you've seen anything of him, but I did find on YouTube a highlights package of that Reysol had made of him. And, you know, he had some good touches and he scored a penalty. Presumably, that was for Reysol, so presumably in a cup match. So he can take penalties and he had a bit of speed about him and he got some goals. I don't know the quality of the talent that was on show there. So, you know, I'm trying to be positive that hopefully, you know, Urakami will bolster our central defence Angelotti will, you know, help our attack, which was rather toothless last year. But again, you wonder, why would Reysol let a 24-year-old go out on loan to Almere? I hope it's that they still believe in him, but they feel he needs a bit of experience before he gets to the Reysol first team. I don't know. The final point I will say about Angelotti, and I know some of my followers on Twitter would agree with me, we're really happy, I think, to at least see that Almere is in the market again for overseas players. I mean, obviously, this is Japan, and we love the Japanese players. You know, we want to be 70-80% mostly, you know, Japanese players, and hopefully some players from Saitama as well. But it is nice, I think, to have an influence, to get an influence from, you know, overseas players, and hopefully to get some goals or some, you know, skills, you know, that they can bring to the mix. And, you know, it seemed as if under our previous manager, Shimoda, that there was a policy of no overseas players, possibly due to the corona, but also in a media quote I read, also due to communication problems. So I'm glad that we're at least moving a little bit forward, slowly forward on that aspect. Yeah, in terms of, you know, other players, I mean, it's good to see Casahara return in goal. He didn't do a lot. I think he played 8 times for Nagasaki last time, but they did finish 11th. I don't know how well he got on there, but he was a keeper that, you know, when I watched him a few years ago, I remember watching him with Steve Barham and thinking that, you know, oh, I think this is a really good keeper. He's the future for Almere between the sticks. But then, you know, I don't know if it was errors seemed to creep in, and I wasn't surprised when he went out on loan. But, you know, he's been given the number one shirt. You know that. You know, hopefully that's a little positive thing coming back, him coming back from loan. But other than that, the only positive action is that some players I like have signed again. Kawata remains. I like Kawata. I was interested. I really thought, and you know, because I've heard you talk on the podcast last season, that why was Naoki Sorma not starting with Kawata. Maybe it's a bit like why Moriyasu didn't start with the player at Brighton.
With Mitoma. Yeah.
Mitoma.
Talk about expectation management, Steve. We'll be getting angry tweets after a few games if he's not, if Kawata's not doing Mitoma numbers.
I know, exactly. But, you know, so I really thought that Kawata would be one of the first to go, because it didn't seem like Sorma fancied him. But, you know, he stayed. So I'm really happy about that. And two key midfielders for me that I like, Kojima and Oyama, have stayed. They're experienced in J2. You know, they're quite strong players in the middle. Oyama does some good free kicks. So, you know, I'm happy that those kind of players have stayed. You know, look, in a dream world, I'd like to see a bit more transfer for activity and some more players move on and exciting new players come back in. But as I think people are realizing as they listen to your podcast and see what Almere have been doing over the past few years, that isn't going to happen for a while. We just don't attract players at a certain level anymore.
No, that's fair enough. I think I'm expecting, like you, I think Casahara will play a lot of games in goal, it seems like, and I also think Niki Urakami will be, I imagine, first choice centre back, at least at the start of the season. Angelotti, I'm not so sure about. No. I remember hearing his name when he first signed, as you said, for Cashew, like maybe two seasons ago, but not a lot really since then. So at the back of my mind, I'm wondering, are we going to be having conversations about like who would have done better with that chance, like Carlo or Angelotti, like if he misses some chances during the season. But I think we better keep an open mind. Like you said, he does have some skills. So we'll see how that goes. Steve, what about, you know, that's the kind of players coming in. Almere, what about the outgoing players? From what I can gather at the moment, Chelsea, Todd Bowley hasn't signed anyone from Almere this transfer window. Although there's still a week of the European window to go. But what about the players that have left? Are there any that particularly sort of you feel disappointed about, or is it because last season was pretty poor? You're not too despondent, or what about the players going out?
The players going out, I'm mostly very content with. I think Naoki Sorma has analysed the squad, the players that he knows he doesn't want and that are not up to the level that he wants have been farmed out or sold or moved on in some way. One of the, you know, for example, I'm quite happy that Nishimura, the central defender, you know, he's gone on loan to Montedio Yamagata, which, you know, they're a very good side and they will, I'm fairly confident they will be looking for promotion next season. And I can't quite believe that, but that they're taking Nishimura, but I'm very happy. At Almere, he was a calamity, unfortunately, certainly in the defensive department. He was most used to Almere for corners in the opposition penalty box because he was a tall lad. He is a tall lad, rather, and he can score headers, you know, very well. Quite happy that he's gone. Another player that I'm quite happy he's gone is Soya Takada. You know, he's still young. He's 21, but he played 31 games for Omir, mostly coming on as a forward, as a substitute forward. You could argue that did he have enough time, but he just looked weak, unfortunately. He scored 31 games and no goals. I mean, you've had your chance. He's young. I think he should be in J3, really. But having said that, he's gone to a very good side. You know, he's gone on loan to Tokushima Vortis. Now, I know they drew a lot of games last season and didn't finish as high as they should have, but if you watch them play, they were a very nice side. Maybe he will fit in there, and maybe, I hope for him, he'll start scoring. But when he played up front for Omir, nothing happened for him, unfortunately. So I think it's time, after 31 games, you know, we need to move someone on. And, you know, good luck to him at Vortis. Good luck to Nishimura. He's still young. He's 24 years old at Yamagata. I'm not sure if he'll get many games. But they're two examples. I mean, I'm sure we could go through other players, and I'm quite happy for them to move on as well. The major disappointment, I think there's only really one disappointment for me on the transfer side, is Ono, Masahito Ono. Now, again, he's moved to Yamagata, but his is not a loan. His is a permanent transfer. I presume it's a one-year contract. But given what I've just said earlier in the answer to your first question, that we don't have a lot of transfer funds, we're not Todd Burley. I would have kept it. I think he's a good player. He's a good J2 player. He can play wing-back, which he did for most of last season. He can play in the midfield. I thought he was quite creative. He would try to go round opposition defenders and put balls in and crosses over and link up well with the other midfielders and attackers. I would have kept him. Maybe there's a reason there. You know, he feels he's good enough and wanted to move on. And I don't blame him. I really don't blame him. Maybe it was the club wanted to move in on. That would surprise me more. Yeah, that's the one transfer that I'm disappointed. Most of the other transfers, for example, Nishimura and Takada, I'm quite happy with. Mm. They won't be missed by me.
Yeah, well, you're talking to a Stoke City supporter. And the last four seasons have been absolutely terrible for us. So every season when we've let players go, there's been like this collective shrug of the shoulders from most supporters, you know, because they're players leaving who haven't performed. I take your point about Masahito Ono. That was the one that's kind of on my list. That's who I thought you were going to say. So I got the same name in my notes here. I wonder if you mentioned that he did a lot of good work in the kind of sort of wing-back role last season. I wonder if that's perhaps a hint that Sommer might be looking to not use wing-backs, or perhaps to have a system with four, you know, flat-back four,
I think so.
As a kind of default, because we know we'll come on to talking about Naoki Sommer in a moment. But perhaps we might be putting two and two together and making five. But I think that's a distinct possibility.
I think that's a very good point, John. Very good point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and Soya Takada, just real quick. If you'd asked me about him, I don't know anything. As far as I'm concerned, I've never seen this guy. You said he played 30 games last season.
Yeah.
Oh, in total. Okay, I wouldn't be able to pick him out of like a police lineup, I've probably have seen him play if he's played that, you know, over the last few seasons. But I just don't know. He's made no impression on me whatsoever.
No impression on me, and I watched him, but I couldn't swear he was either one of those ones who came from university or from the under 18 or another club's under 18 in Gudmar or somewhere. You know, he's a nice player. He's a nice kid. He's got. You know, I'm sure he can trap a ball and pass a ball, and in the hurdy-burly of the match.
Yeah, you need a little bit more, don't you?
A little bit more up front. And, you know, the disappointing thing was he rarely took a shot when he did play. I agree that I probably, if you go into that detail of the number of games he played, a lot of them were probably substitutions. But, I mean, when you're a substitute and you're a young guy and you're trying to get in, you're trying to, you know, muscle your way into the manager's thoughts to say that you're a starter, you've got to take your chances and you've got to be direct and you've got to be wanting to win, not just, I'll play a nice pass. No regrets.
No, fair enough. And speaking of being direct, we should move on to another topic, Steve. We mentioned his name a few times already, but it's the same manager, isn't it, coming back for me for this year. It's Naoki Sommer, formerly of Machida Zelvia, briefly I think Kawasaki as well, and Kashima Antlers.
Yes.
So he did well to keep them up. Yeah. I think last season.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, and are you satisfied to be going into battle with him in charge again?
I think I have to be, you know, and I am. He has earned it, as you said. He kept us up when we were in great danger of going down to J3. He did a very good job on the defence at short notice that, you know, Shimoda had left the defence in an absolute state and we were going in one direction. And he put some blocks on that and that kept us up, you know, bringing in Okaniwa and Hakamata. With that, which I think I talked to you about in our the last time we spoke on the pod about the when we reviewed on his season. So he earned that, right? And I think he's going to, and I'm happy because I think, you know, again, given some of the answers I've given to your questions earlier, you know, it's clear that Omiya do not have a lot of funds. We're not attracting the players. We need someone who can work with not the top players and find these little gems who might just steal up our defense and keep us in the league. And I think that, you know, as a defensive minded coach, that's what we need at the moment. And hopefully he can, you know, sort of build that rock that he can get the creative players, you know, Kawata, Shibayama, and maybe this new guy, Angelotti, to work better when we've got a more solid defence, perhaps, if that works. And that's what I'm hoping. I'm not expecting that Omiya is going to, you know, suddenly, you know, transform the style of football it plays and play like a large number of the clubs in J2. I mean, I enjoyed watching Niigata last year. I enjoyed watching Tokushima Vortis, even though they ended up in draws. I enjoyed watching Roasso Komamoto. You know, they played quite well, nice football. You know, I think we will be going to 4-4-2 or staying with 4-4-2 with Naoki Sommer used it at the end of last season too. I'm not expecting Pep Guardiola football or that kind of an attempt to play that kind of football. I may be wrong about all this. You know, but that's my feeling.
No, I think Naoki Sommer and Pep Guardiola are not usually in the same sentence, same area. So that's fair analysis, I think. And maybe, you know, like we mentioned, only kind of three major kind of signings that we picked out, right? And one of those is a goalkeeper, one is a defender. It's not. Perhaps some listeners might think you're being overly realistic, you know, Steve. But I think you've watched Omiya for long enough that your pessimism or your realism is well placed, I think.
Yeah. Listen, my frustration with Omiya would not be with Naoki Sommer. It might be a little bit with Shimoda, but not wholly with Shimoda, because I think he was trying to move us to the kind of football that I'd more enjoy watching and would attract me to go to the stadium more than watch it on TV. I mean, my frustration would be more with who's running the show and, you know, why aren't they building for the future getting a system, a coaching system and a management system and getting the players, you know, to play the way that most of most football teams play in J1 and J2. Mm-hmm. And I've never watched J3, but probably some of them do in J3. Mm-hmm. But we don't, you know, all through Omiya being in J1, which I enjoyed greatly. And I saw some good players and some fantastic wins, but we've never really played that kind of possession based football. Mm-hmm. You know, that was where my frustration really be, you know, I'm a realist. Naoki Sommer, I think, is a realist. And I think he's also a good, you know, I was very impressed the way that he's straight away, as soon as he arrived, within 1 or 2 weeks, Nishimura was gone and never heard of again. He wasn't even on the bench. You know, he was gone. Now, that Nishimura was playing every week under Shimoda and also, I think, the previous manager. You know, we've got limited resources, limited funds. We need that. We need that kind of good coaching, good analysis, good decision making that Sommer can do to try and well, coming on to it in the next question, maybe.
Well, I think it's that those points are really interesting because, of course, for anyone listening who's a bit newer or doesn't know, Naoki Somi is an ex-Japan national team defender, right? Left back.
Yes.
So he knows a defender when he sees one. I also think when it comes to his managerial style, not to kind of derail us from talking about Omiya, but basically, if you're a defender and you're playing for Naoki Somi, you have to be able to follow the instructions that you're given.
Yeah.
And one thing about Keisuke Nishimura, I think there is a good player in there somewhere, but he's dozy and he ball watches and switches off, and that's the kind of thing that I don't think Naoki Somi really has a lot of patience for. Like if you can't follow the instructions that you've been given, perhaps this is true. This must be true for most managers, but I think Naoki Somi more than most. If you can't do what you're told, basically in the back line, he won't work with you to fix that. I don't think. I think you'll be out. So yeah, fair enough. Well, we talked a lot about ins and outs and the manager.
Sure.
Steve.
Good.
It's time for the hard questions now. Where are Omiya going to finish this season, do you think? And you can give me two answers if you like. Head first, and then heart, or just one answer, or just a deep sigh, whichever you like.
I think heart is just dream time. You know. Heart. I mean, you'd wish that Omiya might be progressing just a little bit and that we might get into some kind of mid-table safety. I can't see us anywhere in the top half once the season really gets going after the second or third week or something. You know, I would take 12th today. I would take 13th, 14th today, absolutely, to be in that area this season, especially. We've still got 22 clubs, but I desperately worry that we're still going to be in that 16 to 22 section. But I would take anywhere between 10 and 16, and anything closer to 10 is really, really good. I'd be really, really happy. And it would be a sign that things are going well. We're not conceding too many goals. Soma's getting the defence working. The midfield creators, you know, Shibayama, and somebody else, other players are doing their thing, and somebody up front is sticking the ball in the net. You know, that would be a real good sign. I can't see us being anywhere near the top. I may be wrong about all this, everybody. I may be wrong, but I can't see it right now. And given that we finished 19th last season, 16th the season before, 15th the season before that, can you blame me? And looking at the kind of ins and outs, there's not a star player there to be seen. So, you can't blame me, surely.
No. Hard dose of a real politic there, Steve. But I don't know. I don't think any of the listeners who've watched Omiya over the last couple of seasons will disagree. Too much on that. Okay, well, we want to try and keep things light and fluffy. So, on a positive note to finish, I've been asking all our correspondents pretty much the same question. Is there anything you're specifically looking forward to about the season coming up? And that could be J2 or elsewhere. It could be Omiya or elsewhere. Is it something that you were particularly excited to something that particularly you're anticipating this season?
I listened to your Patreon only podcast that you did with Johnny Nickel, and that was very useful and interesting about the changes that are coming up to J-League. So the fact that this season three clubs from J2 will go up to J1, but the playoff team, the third team who will be the playoff winner, they will only play J2 sides in the playoff. There's no playing the third from bottom J1 side anymore. That's a real positive. That's a real positive. That gives an extra J2 side a definite chance now. Where before it was just a chance because they had to play off against somebody whose squad was, supposedly J1 level, which usually, and against the home team rule being 1-0 up. So, or a draw is enough for the home team. So, I think that's a real positive thing, and if Omiya were any better, I'd be really excited about that opportunity. but I'm just interested to see, who will go up and how that will affect the J League going forward as well. And then the other point is, so we're going to get two sides coming back to us from Shizuoka, Jubilo coming back quicker than they wanted to, and I'm sure, and Espal's coming back. I love watching the Shizuoka sides. They always bring a good crowd to Omiya and fill the away end usually, and bring a good atmosphere. They of course will be disappointed to see us, but because they want to be in the J1, of course. But you know, that'll be fun to see.
That's a good shout. Don't forget Fujieda as well, a third Shizuoka side. You know, in J2.
Actually, and of course they're coming up the other way.
Yeah, and they'll have a Masayuki Yamada in their ranks to so I'm sure he won't be scoring any last minute winners or anything like that.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the Shizuoka sides back in J2, and also to see Atsushi Kurakawa, who actually left us to go to Jubilo, but he didn't get on too well there. He played a few games for them in J1, but obviously they got relegated. He's moved on to Machida, who are a team who've made a lot of transfers and are seemingly going somewhere, they hope. And, you know, I'm interested to see how he gets on there, because he was one of our good players that we had, a good young player, but he seemed desperate to get out of Omiya. And I just, you know, it's always interesting to see how players, Omiya players, get on when they move to other teams, and to see if they do well or if they don't do well. You know, Esaka has done well at Reysol and then Reds, you know, and I didn't think he was that much at Omiya. He was okay, you know. So but Kurakawa was one of our better players in that side a couple of years ago. So, and we were sad to see him go in many ways. Yeah, he scored more goals than Tomiyama and Tagada and Shunsuke Kikuchi, who's left us. And so I'm looking forward to seeing him as well. That's always fun to see the old Omiya players come back, though they do quite often come back and haunt us.
Well, there's a lot of ex. There are an increasingly large number of ex-Omiya players around to do this to me, aren't they? So Steve, you know, thanks for the thanks for ending on a high note for us with some things to look forward to. That felt like a bit like a kind of therapy or you know, session for you know, on my end. So I mean, I'm glad there are some positives going into the new season. And I think Omiya are going to start with an orange derby, right, away at Yamaguchi.
I'm really looking forward to the start of the season, John, and you know, this is a situation we are in. We have to be realistic. But, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, cheering the lads on. We hope they'll give, you know, their best effort. And, you know, I always enjoy, you know, following Omiya through thick and thin, whichever way it goes, you know. So come on, you squirrels.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic stuff, Steve. Yeah, and thanks so much for coming on the pod. We really appreciate it, because otherwise it'd be me and James savaging Omiya. So to have your insights is greatly appreciated. Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much. And yes, it's at RDJ01 Talk, right, for anybody who wants to follow on Twitter. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Okay.
Well, my pleasure, John.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Let's get together soon, and hopefully we'll be discussing an Omiya win or two at some point during the campaign ahead. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again with James, and thanks for the insights onto Omiya, Steve. Let's hope 2023 is a good campaign for Omiya supporters everywhere. James, we'll continue with our kind of tour of Greater Kanto. Gunma is the next stop on our sort of long distance, probably quite cramped and colder bus journey this morning. So, Gunma, well, I mean, they finished 20th last season, didn't they? Just about avoiding the relegation zone. 11 wins, 9 draws, 22 losses. So they lost more than half the games in the 42-game season. Just the 36 goals scored, which is not particularly good. 57 conceded, also a bit of a scary number. And they ended up with 42 points. And they sort of survived by the skin of their teeth, didn't they? They're sticking with the same manager. The fairly intimidating Tsuyoshi Otsuki is back in the technical area for 2023. Not too many players coming in, I don't think, and quite a few departures. James, how sort of nervous/optimistic should Gunma followers be for this season?
I expect more of the same from Gunma. I think looking at the list of, they've a lot of outs, and some of them, I think, were quite important players, like Masaya Kojima and Junior Kato have both gone to Kanazawa. It's good signings for Kanazawa, which I'm sure we'll hear more about from Victor in the future. And they've lost Shunpei Fukahori to Ehime, Kohei Shin to Nagano, Kunitomo Suzuki's gone back to Matsumoto. Those players all played quite a large part in last season. But they were not particularly good. Gunma generally were not particularly good. So I'm not sure that they're going to be that much of a loss. However, I'm not really sure about the replacements because there are a few university signings, a few people have come back from loans. A couple of names that stood out for me. One was Chie Edo John Kawakami from Tokushima, the midfielder, who I guess will probably be a fairly steady. The other one is the forward Hayate Take, who's come in from Akita on loan. I really rate him. I think that if he's given minutes, he will score goals. He did that at Toyama a couple of years ago in J3. He scored a lot of goals for them, and that's what earned him the move to Akita. He wasn't given that much game time at Akita, but when he did get on the pitch, he scored. So I expect him to lead the line for Gunma, and I think that he will do well for them. But I think they've kept Masatoshi Kushibiki, the goalie, who, apart from a few dodgy moments in the second half of last year, is a good goalie. And also the defender Hatao, is it Hiroto Hatao, who also had a few dodgy moments, but is a good defender. So I think, well, we know their aim is going to be to survive, but I wonder if perhaps we will start to see the fruits of Odsky's reign, because otherwise, like, he's quite a big name manager, but they're still kind of trundling along, trying to avoid relegation and nothing much more than that. So I wonder if anything's really going to change. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's all good analysis, James. I think when it comes to talking about Gunma, you know, nobody is under any illusions that the goal is always survival at the start of each season. And I think when you're looking at the squad, something I've started to do is I compare sort of teams from the sort of lower regions of J2, and I look at, you know, squads at the top of J3. I don't see too much difference between Gunma and a lot of the more sort of upwardly mobile J3 size. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if Gunma had a game against Matsumoto, for example, I'm not sure that Gunma would win. So yeah. I think they're going to be up against it. They definitely seem to have trimmed the squad if you look at just the numbers of players that have left versus numbers coming in. So I think that kind of, we can extrapolate that perhaps, you know, belt tightening is going on financially. And I think it's always difficult to be confident that a manager is going to improve the team when there's less money than there was the season before. So I think it's going to be a tough old battle. On the flip side, a tough old battle is exactly what Gunma are all about, and they know the drill. You know, they understand the assignment, don't they? So that should stand them in good stead. I think Daiki Nakashio is coming from Yokohama FC at the back, so perhaps a good reinforcement there. Ryo Ishii from Urawa Reds is a kind of backup goalkeeper. Perhaps you know, Odsky is obviously, you know, well connected at Urawa, so maybe that's a move with a player that he knows personally. Ryo Kawamoto, who I really like, is kind of explosive, kind of shoot from anywhere mentality. Not sure how good a footballer he actually is, but his shooting is you know, sort of like pocket, you know, pound shop Cristiano vibe. I look forward to watching him. And yeah, I totally agree about Hayate Take. The only other interesting attacker is perhaps Ryo Sato, who's coming from Kita Kyushu, and he's a player who I think had a pretty good season in J3. So we can say he's proven at J3 level. He didn't really do very well last time he was in J2 with Kita Kyushu. So I'm kind of wondering if he now is in a position where he can step up in what is going to be a team where, if we're being realistic, chances are going to be at a premium, and when the ball gets into the other team's final third, you kind of have to make sure you make chances and get goals. So I predict a tough season ahead. I think they might end up with a few more points than 2022. They might end up with a fewer points. You know, it's really hard to say at this stage, but I think looking at the squad and the transfer business has been done, it's hard to imagine them finishing any higher than, you know, if they finish in comfortable mid-table, I think that'd be a very successful season for them, wouldn't it? So don't mean to put a downer on things. I think they're battle hardened sort of relegation dogfighters, so I'm not relegating them just yet, but I think they're going to spend more time this season looking over their shoulders, aren't they, than looking up. Yeah. I think so. Good luck to all involved, I should say. Don't think they necessarily need to pack it in, you know, give up just yet. But let's move on, James. What about a kind of a, you know, relatively near neighbour of Gunma, I suppose, geographically speaking, again, a any geographical mistakes are all mine, so I'll take that. Mito Hollyhock, they've lost sort of everybody's favourite honorary uncle manager in Tadahiko Akiba. Yoshimi Hamasaki is in as the new manager, and again, it's a promotion from the back room, isn't it? He was the assistant manager under Akiba, so he's in the hot seat for 2023. Last season, Mito finished in comfortable mid-table, 13th place, 14 wins, 12 draws, and 16 losses, and 54 points in total. Transfer business is interesting, as it always is with Mito. They seem to ship out basically half the squad and ship in half of a new squad. So, James, what are we to make of Mito?
Yeah, well, the last few years with Akiba as manager, every year they've lost basically the entire squad, replaced it, and we've wondered, oh, can he get them to gel? Will they finish comfortably mid table like they have before? And he's managed it, and that's why we rate him so highly, and that's why he's earned this move to he's gone to Shimizu, hasn't he, an assistant or something? Mm-hmm. But we don't know about Yoshimi Hamasaki. We don't know if he's going to be able to do the same thing. And they've lost, again, a lot of players. And the ones that stand out were, for me, Naoki Tsubaki, who we mentioned a little while ago, and Kosuke Kinoshita, who's earned a move to Kyoto in J1. You picked him out at the start of last year as a player to watch, and he certainly was. So, yeah, well done again.
Oh, I've been dining out on that for a full 12 months at this point, yeah.
But what's interesting in terms of the ins, for me, the really interesting ones are up front, which is, well, not an in so much as an extension of Shoji Toyama. His loan from Gamba has been extended, and we didn't see much of him last year. But at the end of the season, he started to get some game time, and he had a very impressive run. Scored some important goals and some good goals. So I think I hope to see more of him from the start of the season. And also, they've signed Yuki Kusano from Yokohama FC. He was on loan at Ryukyu last year. And in the first part of the season, before he got injured, he was basically the only goal scorer at Ryukyu. And he got injured. It was a huge loss for them. And when he came back from injury, he couldn't quite find his scoring touch. But I think him. I quite like to see him and Toyama up front together and see how they get on. I think that they'll be pretty good. But yeah, the thing about Mito is, it's always hard to know how they're going to do, and even more so now that they've got their new manager. We don't know, is he going to be able to do the kind of magic that his predecessor could? What are your thoughts on Mito?
Yeah, this Mito is, you've really hit the nail on the head, James. It's a really difficult team to predict because, yeah, I'm still not really sure how much of that last three seasons was down to Akiba's like sheer personality and force of will. So I think obviously Yoshimi Hamasaki is going to come in as the assistant. We anticipate he is going to set the team up in a similar way. Training will be similar. You know, the ethos of the side is going to be similar. So that kind of leads me on to thinking, I think we're really going to see how big a character or how big an impact the personality of Akiba had on that team. Because I think last season's squad finished 13th, but could have struggled a lot more, right? They could have been a lot worse off had it not been for, well, I mean, maybe there are many factors, but Akiba being the most visible one. So I wouldn't be too confident that they're going to finish 13th again. I think they might be a little bit further down the table this time. I don't necessarily think they're going to be scrapping with Gunma in a kind of, you know, Kita Kanto relegation battle. But you mentioned they lost Kosuke Kinoshita. I think that's a big one. Yoshitake Suzuki from midfield, who's gone to Fajiano Yaken, was kind of like the glue that sort of knitted things together between the defence and the attack a lot of the time. So losing him is also a big blow. I think that's mitigated by some of the players that have come in. Like you mentioned, Yuki Kusano, if fit, is proven at this level. Shoji Toyama, there's a great player in there, but he tends to just start scoring goals from like second half stoppage time onwards. If they can get him scoring goals perhaps a little bit earlier, then
on the pitch earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Making substitute appearances, wasn't
he? Yeah, he's a good player. He's got skills. And midfield also has some interesting additions, like a Hidetoshi Takeda, who was on loan at Omiya last year from Urawa, is a very skillful and tricky dribbler, but also very kind of raw and skinny. I think if you were to describe it, perhaps willowy would be a good adjective for his kind of physical. But he's a lot stronger than he looks, clearly, because he can dribble and take people on with the ball and ride tackles. So he's a very Mito. He's a very Akiba-esque player, I feel, coming in. Motoki Ohara, who I think is on loan from Hiroshima, but played at Ehime in J3 last year, also caught my eye, like him, in midfield. And Reo Yasunaga, who just couldn't get into the team and make the grade at Yokohama FC, has joined Mito on a permanent deal. So there are good and interesting players coming in, but I think I don't want to build up Akiba too much. And it sounds like I'm saying, well, the squad was bad last year and Akiba kind of squeezed as much as he could out of them. That's not exactly what I'm trying to say, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is a bit of a regression with Mito this year. Yeah, we'll wait and see. But I think I was saying that about the first two seasons of Akiba's time in charge, and they ended up finishing 12th, you know, 11th and 13th. So you know, we should take this with a pinch of salt. All right, James. So we on that note, let's take another quick pause, because for another kind of Kita Kanto side, Tochigi, we've got a report from our correspondent in the field. It's Matt Bruce at Matthew D. Bruce on Twitter. He's got the lowdown on Tochigi for us. So here comes Matt.
Hello there. Thanks a lot for having me on again to talk about Tochigi SC and their season coming up. But the truth is, I've found it quite difficult to muster up any enthusiasm for them in this off-season. Their business has been, to put it bluntly, quite underwhelming. I think they've made two kind of notable signings ahead of this season, one of whom was already at the club, actually, finished the season on loan at Tochigi from FC Tokyo, now permanently arrived. That's Yojiro Takahagi, the former national team player. But at the age of 36, he's not exactly one for the future. But I think it says a lot about how Tochigi are going to line up this season. I think a lot of the heavy lifting, as it has been in previous seasons, really, is going to be done by this kind of crew of players they've got over the age of 36. They've looked at another former national team player, Kisho Yano, has been a key player for them in the last few seasons. I think you look to him to do a lot again this season. And the other player who's come in for Tochigi this season is a defender from FC Ryukyu, Ryohei Okazaki. Obviously, he got relegated with them last season, and I don't think anyone there really covered themselves in glory. So not exactly one that kind of fills me with enthusiasm, but we'll see how he gets on. Other than that, they've just made a couple of pickups from kind of university leagues, kind of speculative kind of things. And then I think they're going to fill out the rest of the squad with kind of loanees, which is what they did last season. So they've already got a couple in. Yuto Yamada from Kashiwa Reysol, Kojiro Yasuda from SC Tokyo, and Hayato Fukushima from Shonan Bellmare. All of these are players who are kind of on the fringes of things at their parent clubs. There's not really much to go on other than that. You have to hope that they're going to come good and that they can kind of coach something into them, because I haven't seen a lot of them to know what to expect. The real story, I think, for Tochigi this offseason has been who they've lost. I think I mentioned in the review podcast that we did looking back on last season, the one player I really highlighted was the defender Carlos Gutierrez, who I thought was really Tochigi's kind of X factor player. He really gave them something different. They've lost him to Machida Zelvia, and that's obviously a really disappointing blow to take. I don't really see how they're going to replace him. He brought a lot of aggression and a lot of kind of physical presence to the squad last season, and I think a lot of what Tochigi did well last season was when they were kind of played in that kind of more aggressive, combative style, when they kind of pressed teams quite high, and I think he was quite key to a lot of that. So I do have kind of concerns that having lost him, I don't know how they're going to replace him, really. I mean, in terms of bodies, they've obviously brought in a couple of players in that position. But in terms of what he can bring to the team, I don't know if they're going to easily replace that. A couple of other players have left, but nothing too kind of notable. Yota Isomura retired at the end of last season. He spent the kind of the second half of last season with Tochigi. And they've let Rimu Matsuoka go to Rasa Kumamoto, probably a good move for him. I think he didn't really feature that heavily for Tochigi last season, and he kind of needs to kind of get a bit of game time. so that might not be a bad move for him or for Totti. So a good move all round. Other than that, though, I think the kind of the Totti SC side that are going to start this season is not going to be a million miles away from the side that, that finished last season. I think kind of stability is going to be the name of the game, really, for Totti. It's manager Yu Tokisaki's second season in charge of the club. And now that he's kind of got his feet under the desk, he's got a season of experience at this level behind him. Hopefully that's a kind of a it'll enable him to kind of push on and kind of really keep going the way they did last season. I think last season they really kind of improved their style of play. They were fairly solid. They weren't in too much danger of relegation in the end, and if you're Tochigi, that's the kind of the best you could hope for. That's something to build on now, and hopefully maybe more than kind of ins and outs, maybe the kind of the what they're doing on the kind of the training pitch this season is going to be what's most important. Look to kind of improve some of their younger players and kind of just improve performances all round, I think is going to be what they're going to aim to do. But without making kind of any major additions to the squad, it is quite difficult to see how they can kind of drastically improve on what they did last season. I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of finishing this season in around about the same area of the table that they were last season. That's kind of about a 17th place finish. If they can avoid getting sucked into a relegation battle, I think that's really the best we can hope for. In terms of things that I'm going to kind of look forward to for next season, well, as I suppose Gunma survived the drop last season and Mito are still knocking around. So those kind of Kitakanto derby matches are still on for this season. Those are always good fun and I kind of look forward to renewing hostilities there. I'm quite looking forward to seeing how Tochi shape up against a newly promoted side, Iwaki, who are, of course, have really kind of come out of the non-leagues and won promotion after promotion. And every time they've gone up a level, they've managed to raise their game again, and obviously spent quite well as well. So I'm interested to see how they get on this season. And I think with it being not far away from Tochigi, we should take a good following to those games. And that could be quite an interesting clash. I look forward to seeing that. But other than that, really, what I'm most looking forward to is cup games. I think a chance to kind of go on a good run, kind of like they did last season, had a good run in the Emperor's Cup last season, and I kind of look forward to seeing what they can do this season, maybe get a clash against kind of a J1 side and maybe pull off an upset there. I think really that's going to be their only chance of glory, because it's not going to come in the league. I think really the best thing I can hope for is a good cup run, and that they don't get sucked into a kind of a relegation battle.
Thanks for that, Matt. Let's hope Tochigi can entertain us all and surprise us all again in 2023. We'll be watching with interest. James, we're back again. There's one more team for us to talk about in part one of our it turned out to be a mammoth season preview, hasn't it? Episode one. And it's an interesting one. It's Kofu. Vanfire Kofu. Now, last season, they finished 18th, which, there's no two ways about it. That was a massive disappointment. They only managed 11 wins from the 42 league games, 15 draws and 16 defeats to finish with 48 points. In mitigation, they did end up somehow, and I'm still pinching myself, they managed to win the Emperor's Cup, didn't they? So the Emperor's Cup champions from J2. So we, in much the same way as I'm dining out on the Korsky Kinoshita pick 12 months later, I think we'll still be talking about Kofu's Emperor's Cup win for some time to come. So that means they've got an interesting season coming up, because obviously they're in J2, but they'll have the Asian Champions League group stage to contend with this summer. Quite a few players have come in, presumably with that Asian Champions League campaign in mind. Also coming in as a new manager, Yoshiyuki Shinoda. Now, he has spent time as the number one at Fukuoka, FC Tokyo, and Shimizu S-Pulse. And I believe, although my grasp of Japanese is not perfect, I think from 2020 until 2022, he was in the backroom staff at Shimizu in some capacity. But now he's the number one at Kofu. James, they are going to do better than last season, aren't they, I suppose? But how much better? What do you think?
Well, you would hope that they'd do better than last year. I agree with your suspicion that they've bulked up the squad for the Champions League, because they have a lot of ins, particularly in midfield. In terms of the players who have gone, it seems like a lot of their foreign contingent has gone. So Foguete, the defender, and Renato Vischi have gone. And also Igor and William Lira, strikers, have gone. In terms of players coming in, they've extended the loan of Nagi Matsumoto. They've got they've extended Getulio's loan. They've also signed Peter Utaka, who is getting on a bit, but I mean, he was still scoring goals in the first half of last year in J1, and then I think he got ill and struggled a little bit. Hopefully his face has recovered from saving Kyoto's skin at the end of last year, blocking that shot right at the death against Kumamoto. But I don't think they've got any major losses apart from William Lira. And they've kept all their impressive performers from last year. So Sho Araki, Motoki Hasegawa, Kazushi Mitsuhira and Yoshiki Torikai were all pretty good last year. But having said that, the team as a whole was rubbish, except in the Emperor's Cup, and they finished 18th. So I don't know if they're going to do better. I would hope that they would, because they shouldn't have been that bad last year. I have no idea why they were so bad last year. But it will be interesting to see how the extra fixtures and the extra travel affects them, particularly if they have a bad first part of the season and then they come to that busy period, how anxious things get at Corfu, and if any big decisions get made. What do you make of Corfu then?
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, you made a good point in that I think the fact that they've retained the, let's say, in inverted commas, impressive performers from last season, because like you said, they were impressive in the Cup, in the Emperor's Cup, but not so much so in the league. Motoki Hasegawa, I think I'm pretty sure he would have been on the move if it weren't for the ACL, you know, kind of carrot, or the ACL kind of prestige that they're going to get this season. I think Yoshiyuki Shinoda, I mean, I don't know. I was watching the J League. I was following back when he was a coach at some of these other teams, but I don't remember anything about him at all. So whether that just means I'm getting old and I, you know, need to take better care of myself mentally, or whether he didn't make much of an impression, I'm not sure. So I think that the jury is out on him. I do get the sense that maybe because this is such a historic campaign in terms of an Asian Champions League, you know, group stage, you know, ticket, that teams in J2 pretty much never have, and Corfu may never have again, let's be honest. I think he will have more or less, I don't want to say a free pass, but I'm sure there aren't many Corfu fans who are expecting the team to challenge at the top of J2 and take the ACL as seriously as can. I mean, we've seen in the past that even the couple of J2 teams every season have to play in the ridiculous Levan Cup group stage, you know, in the first part of the season. And it's very difficult to sort of marshal your resources for those two. So I think we are probably going to see a Corfu side which has pretty much from the start of the season in a month's time, they're going to have one eye on that ACL group stage. It's going to be a sort of tantalizing distraction, if you like. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they do in the league games. My gut feeling is, just by default, they're going to finish higher than 18th, because I think that was enormous. And we've joked in the past that their natural order of things is they finish about 5th.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's wildly optimistic. So I don't anticipate they'll be 5th, but I think somewhere between 5th and 18th is my prediction. You know, that's not very helpful for the listeners. But good players have come in. I think Utaka, I mean, obviously he's done it in the J League for years. He's done it at Corfu before, so they know what they're getting. I know he's got the he's taken advantage of the relaxed shirt number rules. I think his squad number is 99. Is that right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something interesting. But I would be very wary about pinning too much on him. Because of his age and fitness. Like, there's no question that the pedigree of the player is unquestioned. But is he 39? Is he even older? I mean, you don't really want to be saying to him, okay, we got minimum 56 games this year. How are your knees? You know, that's not really what you want to do. And then this guy, Getulio, I'm not sure how much he's played. You know, I don't know anything about him. So we will see. I think my gut feeling is they've got to be better than last year in the league, because it was dreadful. And I think they'll pin a lot of hopes on kind of just enjoying the sort of the ACL adventure. It would be amazing if they could get through to the knockout stage. I actually don't watch the ACL very closely, so I'm not sure how likely it is that they get a favourable draw. and we'll have a chance of going through. I think my fear is that they are just sort of kind of treading water or coasting in the league until summer, looking forward to the Champions League. And then if it turns out that the level of their group or the level in the ACL is too high and they get beaten quite badly, you know, and they're eliminated after sort of, you know, three rounds of the group stage, then we might have the case where they have the ACL campaign is sort of over before it's begun. And then their league, you know, when they come back to the league, there's not much for them to play for there either. So I think there is the possibility it could go sour.
They just have to win the Emperor's Cup again.
Win the Emperor's Cup again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, easy. It would, yeah, just do that again. Yeah, I'm sure that's what Shinoda will be saying. Like, guys, do what you did in the cups, but do it in the league games as well. It's not rocket science. Yeah, I'm available for consultations, James. If any J League clubs that want to hire me as like director of football. But I suspect they will do better than last season in the league. But I will be pleasantly surprised, and I will have an eyebrow raised if I see them in the playoffs at the end of the season. I think that is a 10th place or to 14th. I'll narrow it down. I think they'll finish in mid-table, 10th to 14th. I don't know. But we've been wrong before, you know, James, on the pod. So
I don't think we are.
Oh, really? So. Okay. Yeah, try and edit those bits out. Okay. Yeah. Well, look, I think we've made enough bold predictions for one pod. James, if all's okay with you, we can end part one of our season previews here. Part two is going to be looking loosely at North and Central Japan. So we've got the teams in the Tohoku region, Akita, Yamagata, and Sendai, as well as Iwaki. Okay, and we'll also be looking at Shizuoka, so Fujieda, Iwata, and Shimizu. I know there's an argument for saying they should be in this pod, but that would take us up to 11 teams, James, and I don't think I could face. That's too much preparation for me for 1 week. So, yeah, hope everybody will come back and join us for part two next time. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the JTalk podcast and JTET. And if you're one of our patrons who supports us on the Patreon website, we of course appreciate that support as well. And we'll hope you'll stick with us for another excited looking season. But yeah, from James and me, that's all for now. We'll be back soon with another J2 season preview. But yeah, enjoy your football wherever you find it. And we'll talk soon. Bye for now.